Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is a 7:42. I'm Howard Feldman. The Israel Report brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israel Property Management and Sales.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shana Tova. Do we say Shavua Tov on a Wednesday? I'm very confused.
We certainly say Shana Tova, and I would say Shavua Tov because for us it's the start of the week.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, for you too. For you, today is Sunday, but tomorrow's Friday.
Tomorrow is Thursday.
Yes, but I'm saying in Israel, it's almost like it's our Friday. So basically, it's, you finish the week tomorrow before you even start it. But either way, it is.
It's been a busy time.
Yes.
And it's good that we're into a new year. And I don't know how many people managed to hear the Prime Minister's address to the United Nations. It feels like such a long time ago, but we haven't spoken about it.
No, we have.
I'm not sure whether people had the opportunity to listen in. It is something that's available on YouTube. And I do suggest that people have a chance to listen into it, even though I found myself being a little cynical about the whole United Nations circus and whether, in fact, it justified the time and energy for our Prime Minister to travel to New York and make his speech, which I found to be a good speech. I thought it was well delivered. I thought that for somebody who is clearly not a native English speaker, I thought his English was good. I thought the content was there. I thought it flowed. I just don't know that he said anything new.
Mm-hmm.
And whether, you know, it was just justified, whether anything really comes out of all of this. And so I was a little cynical to people around me, and I said to them, I thought it was a bit of a waste of time because the Prime Minister's got a real job to do, and I don't know why he's got to go to New York to say what he said. And then I was asked whether our Prime Minister could afford not to be there. That's the real question, not whether he needed to be there, but whether he could afford not to be there, given the fact that the President of the United States found that it was necessary for him to travel up from Washington to address the United Nations. The Prime Minister of Great Britain found it necessary for her to travel from London under what must have been quite pressurized circumstances for her to make her address to the United Nations General Assembly. So why should the Prime Minister of Israel not do the same? And I think there's some validity to that argument, although I'm still not quite sure what comes out of the whole United Nations circus. But the good news is that Prime Minister Yair Lapid did have a chance to make some very important contacts and to meet important people while he was in New York, although President Joe Biden was not one of them. And one of the questions that was asked in a newspaper article that I saw, which said, was it worth his while going all the way to New York if he didn't meet the U.S. president? But of course, he did have the chance to meet the president of the U.S. not too long before that. So, yeah, I'll leave you to draw your conclusions about the United Nations.
Absolutely. Unrest has continued in Jerusalem over Rosh Hashanah and also after the holidays. What's this about?
Well, apparently a lot of preparations were made on the Temple Mount for the possibility that Jewish worshippers might ascend the Temple Mount on Rosh Hashanah and blow the shofar, because apparently that's what people do on Rosh Hashanah. So there were pictures that I saw of preparations that had gone on in the mosque, hoarding stones and people getting ready for all kinds of unrest in order to protest the possibility that Jews may come onto the Temple Mount over Rosh Hashanah. There were days of unrest. Both days of Rosh Hashanah were quite eventful on the Temple Mount, with unrest and people being arrested and Israeli police active in order to try to protect worshippers who were allowed onto the Temple Mount during the period of Rosh Hashanah. And apparently the unrest has continued. More people have been arrested in the days, in the evening that followed Rosh Hashanah. And there were also clashes around East Jerusalem, just more broadly, not only focused on the Temple Mount, but even more broadly in Jerusalem. And, you know, again, it just brings me to this question, which is bothering me a lot, which is, you know, do we stay away from the Temple Mount in order not to create any reason for unrest? Or do we assert our authority and go to the Temple Mount because it is under our control, and because Muslim worshippers are allowed to go there, and there is no reason why Christians are prevented from going onto the Temple Mount? So why should Jews not be allowed to go onto the Temple Mount and even to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah on the Temple Mount, if that's what people want to do? And why should we resist the temptation? Why should we say to ourselves we shouldn't do it in the interest of trying to keep peace and quiet? And indeed, will it keep peace and quiet? And what is the message that will be sent to others around us, particularly those Muslims who want to make sure that we don't go onto the Temple Mount and that we are prevented from doing so? So it's just one of those things that continuously occupies my mind. And of course, I'm always interested to hear what the viewers have to say, the listeners have to say about this, because it is something which really splits us. There are people who feel that it is an act of defiance, and that it does potentially create a conflict point for Jews to go into the Temple Mount and pray.
Absolutely.
What do you think?
Yeah, I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. Do we avoid conflict, not go to the Temple Mount to pray, blow the shofar, and hopefully then have a little bit of more peace? Or do we say that this is worth it? This is an important thing to do. I'd love your reaction, please. Ukrainian reports say that Iranian suicide drones were specifically aimed at ultra-Orthodox worshippers in Uman. Tell us about this.
Well, this is a report that really got me angry. And then I understood that I'm not sure whether it's true or not. So I'm giving a warning to you guys, because I'm not sure. I haven't been able to verify the truth of these reports, but there are definitely a number of reports in the different newspapers which have spoken about Ukrainian reports saying that Russia had specifically aimed Iranian suicide drones at worshippers in Uman. Now, we discussed the whole thing about Uman last week, and we said these 30,000 ultra-Orthodox Breslev Hasidim are going to Uman in the middle of a war. They've been warned not to go. They've been told that it is not safe. They have even been embroiled in some controversy between comments about from Russia's foreign minister about whether their safety can be guaranteed or not. Mm-hmm. And yet they decided to go. So there is a certain level of responsibility that they are taking for their own safety, because they already been warned that this is not the cleverest thing that they could do to start the new year. And so they went. Having gone there and having established themselves in Uman and celebrated Rosh Hashanah and whatever else happens in Uman, the question is whether the Russians would be justified in specifically aiming suicide drones, knowing full well that the place is crowded with ultra-Orthodox worshippers. Now, for me, if the reports are true that Russia aimed no fewer than 10 Iranian suicide drones that could potentially have killed many, many people, if that is true, then that is almost like an act of war. That's almost like something that you do purposefully in order to create some sort of a reaction. Or the question is whether the Ukrainian authorities have created this and made themselves out to look like they are protecting us, because the next part of the report says, well, that the drones were shot down and nobody was injured and everything's okay. And so is this something that the Ukrainian authorities have conjured up in order to try and create some certain level of sympathy and empathy with the Ukrainian cause? Because one of the most noticeable things that came out before Rosh Hashanah was President Zelensky's comment about Israel, that Israel has provided no defensive equipment to the Ukrainian war effort, and he was very, very critical about that particular fact. Let's park aside for a moment the fact that I think 20 Ukrainian soldiers who are seriously injured are being brought to Israel for medical treatment, to our hospitals to get specialized treatment here, people who've sustained injuries in that war. So, you know, Israel has tried to do whatever it can from a humanitarian perspective, but as I understand it, has refrained from getting involved in the whole military side. And of course, Israel does have protective equipment, which is world-renowned and proven in war situation, and would have been very, very helpful to the Ukrainian authorities to prevent not only suicide drones, but indeed missile attacks, which have been aimed at Ukraine by Russia, undoubtedly so. But this story was really playing on my mind and made me angry last night when I read, first of all, that these drones had been aimed towards Uman. And then I sort of wondered to myself whether it's not something which is being used potentially by the Ukrainians in order to create a reaction in Israel. I'll leave all of you guys to, you know, decide for yourselves what you think and potentially read things up. But these are real stories which are being published in our press right now, although nobody really knows which side to take because we're not really quite sure exactly what transpired and what went down.
Yeah. And I also see the Times of Israel reporting Putin tells Russian Jews he expects a hefty contribution in his New Year's message. Statements encouraging the community to integrate comes after tens of thousands rushed to leave. And of course, that is quite dangerous that when we have this type of language.
Well, definitely so. I mean, let's put things into context a little bit, because something like 100,000 people have rushed out of Russia, not only Jews. These are just, ordinary Russian citizens who have no other place to go. Many of them are rushing to Georgia to try and cross the border. Satellite pictures showing queues of cars trying to get out of Russia, because for the very, very first time since the Second World War, the Russian government has enforced conscription, a call-up of people, some of whom have not even really been properly trained from a military perspective, and young people, particularly military age men, are running away from Russia to get out as soon as they can. I understand that the cost of a ticket from Moscow to Istanbul one way has reached something like $8,000.
Oh, my word.
If you can get your hands on one. Wow. If you can get your hands on one. Wow. Okay. Wow. People are running away from Russia as a result of what's going on. And of course, the Russian President Putin has come out particularly laying certain responsibilities on the Jews, saying he expects them to integrate, which really means he expects them to turn up for the war effort and to come and to participate. And he will do whatever he can to prevent people from leaving Russia. And of course, in the meantime, the Israeli authorities are gearing up for a massive influx of Russians as a result of this conscription call. So what's going on in Russia right now is really crazy. And has caused a lot of chaos, and is probably the single most destabilizing action that the Russian government have taken since the start of the war. The actual outbreak of the war didn't cause this level of destabilization in Russia. People are really running for their lives right now to try and get out of Russia. So, yeah, I mean, the Jewish community clearly caught up in the middle of all of this, and Israel caught up in the middle of all this, because Israel really not quite sure which way to go in terms of whether it comes out in full support of Ukraine providing military equipment and things like that or not. At the moment, Israel is still treading this very, very difficult middle path between trying not to annoy Russia by supplying military equipment to Ukraine, but at the same time somehow trying to assist Ukraine as much as possible. Interestingly, the Jerusalem Post, in its list of the 50 most influential Jews in the world in the year 5782, the Jewish year 5782 that has just ended, named Volodymyr Zelensky as most influential Jew number one in the world pipping Yair Lapid to the post, who came in second on their list.
That's unbelievable.
And interestingly, of course, Zelensky, halachically Jewish, so there was a question about whether he's really Jewish or not, and whether he could really appear on the list or not. Halachically Jewish, but not a practicing Jew. But of course, he has used his Jewish connections in order to try and conjure up certain feelings. He is number one on the list, apparently, as the most influential Jew in the world in the year just gone by.
It's, and I see that Israel has rejected the annexation vote in occupied Ukraine as Russian proxies claim victory. So that's also an important part, as Israel seems to be moving into a position, whether it likes it or not, I don't think it's going to be able to help. But just a final story that I wanted to chat to you about was Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has contacted President Herzog ahead of the New Year holiday.
Yes, so this was Mahmoud Abbas calling Buzi Herzog to wish him a Shana Tova, and the call apparently was made on Tuesday, interestingly enough, and apparently during the call the president called for good neighborly relations between Israel and the Palestinians, and of course underscored the importance of trying to work together to ensure calm and to stop violence, and of course cooperation from a civil and security point of view in order to try to restore the calm. Now, we've already discussed the fact that there's been an uptick of violence within the Palestinian Authority area, and some of this, we believe, is being fueled to some degree by people from within the Palestinian Authority itself. We're not suggesting for a moment that Mahmoud Abbas himself is sending instructions for people to carry out terror attacks. But certainly from within his relatively close circle and from within the security forces, there do seem to be more and more people from that area involved in these security incidents in the terror attacks. And so that's, of course, a major concern. Interestingly, Mahmoud Abbas had the opportunity to address the United Nations General Assembly last week. And on the one hand, he went off saying that he didn't think he has a partner for peace any longer. On the other hand, he said he does want to engage with Israel in order to come to some sort of an agreement. He called upon the United Nations to try to force Israel to comply with certain United Nations resolutions that have been passed pertaining to the Arab-Israel conflict. So a little confusing about what Mahmoud Abbas really wanted in his address to the United Nations. Interestingly, of course, the Palestinian Authority is not a full member of the United Nations. There are observers, but on this occasion, they were not really observing. They were allowed to actually have their say. So I will just end off by hoping that those people who are fasting today will have an easy and a meaningful fast. This guy, Gedalia, who comes in straight after Rosh Hashanah, is an interesting character. It's got nothing to do with the fact that we're trying to recover from all the overeating over Rosh Hashanah, but it's more to do with the fact that he was assassinated, we understand, on Rosh Hashanah, and they've delayed the fast until the day afterwards. He is an interesting guy in himself, but that would be a story for another time, because I need to leave you to go to the news.
You do indeed. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, the Israel Report brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israeli Property Management and Sales.